Hello and welcome to Ahead of the Curve, the podcast from AcadiaSoft, where we take time to get under the skin of the margin and collateral industry, to dig deep and present topical perspectives and insights on this hugely important sector. The standardized approach for counterparty credit risk, or SACA as it's more widely known, is transforming how the industry operates and is regulated. The SACA framework, born under the Basel III Accords, replaces the previous internal model method and is regarded as a more risk-sensitive methodology for measuring counterparty credit risk. The impact of SACA is far-reaching, not least in its demand of banks for new, tougher capital requirements. So what does this all mean for the margin and collateral industry? To discuss this, I'm joined by two expert guests. Donald Gallagher is co-head of quantitative services at AcadiaSoft, and Justin Klug is president of Capitolis. Donald, Justin, welcome to you both.
Hi, John and Justin, great to be on with you.
Great to be on with you both as well.
Well, it's great to have you both here for the program, and it's a really interesting topic that we're looking at, and one that I think needs a little explanation first. So before we get into the weeds of all of this, take us through SACA in a little more detail. Why is it being introduced? Donald, I'll come to you first.
Well, thanks, John. So SACA, or Standard Approach to Counterparty Credit Risk, is all about capital. And this change really has its origins in the financial crisis of 2007-08. And if we cast our mind back to that time, there were failures of financial institutions, both in the US and in Europe. There were mergers and forced mergers of entities that were failing, and there was a general and real possibility sense that the financial system would fail. And with all the attendant consequences of that, which would be pretty catastrophic, it has to be said. So the changes since that, of which SACA are part, I really perceive two big trends in there. One is about more and better capital and better quality capital. And the other, which is probably less talked about, is about standardization. And things around standardization, I'm thinking over the introduction of clearing, the introduction of the new uncleared margin rules, and now the standard approach to counterparty credit risk. So these are big changes in how the industry has, operates and is regulated, and they've been coming in rolling waves since 2010. If we step back a little bit and think about what is capital and why is it there, it is there to protect the creditors of a financial institution. It is the first thing that absorbs losses. So it is really money, cash, that is sitting on the balance sheet of the bank and is there to absorb losses. And it only really comes from two places. It comes from retained earnings, so that is previous profits of the bank, or it comes from new raises from the shareholders. And it is expensive. Capital typically costs anywhere between 10 and 15% per annum for a financial institution. So it is probably the most precious and expensive resource that an institution has to manage. So it really is key to how any financial institution manages itself. And the allocation of capital and the clever allocation of capital is one of the core arts, if you like, of banking and investing. So this, if we just think for a second, where does SACA fit in counterparty credit risk? There are three forms of capital. There's market risk, counterparty credit risk, and operational risk. And probably the biggest of those is counterparty credit risk. That's capital is there to absorb losses if someone that you do business with defaults. And it's by and large in financial institutions the larger part of the capital and the most critical. So this change, this introduction of a new method of calculating that capital is really, really significant.
And Justin, that element of counterparty credit risk that Donald has just raised there, is that the primary function then of SACA, to facilitate that, to regulate that, to make it more efficient and make it more work better, frankly, given the origins of the regulation in the first place?
Yeah, I think Donald described it very well, and SACA specifically is definitely designed to address risk-based capital that's primarily linked to counterparty credit risk, of course. I'd add a few additional points. The first is I think the market really appreciates the prudential regulators continuing to shore up the system to make it safer for all participants. Donald, you mentioned kind of the crisis in 2008, and that makes me think about what we've just gone through here with the global pandemic. And there wasn't really any time during the global pandemic that anyone had any real acute fear of the financial services sector deteriorating to anywhere near the level we saw in 2008. And part of that is due to kind of the prudential regulatory package that's been adopted over the last 10 years. In SACR specifically, you know, in this case, linking that prudential regulation of derivatives to methodology that's designed to do things better, like better mirror the impact of margined versus unmargined trades to perhaps recognize more accurately netting benefits in the primary asset classes in which market participants trade. I'd also say more generally that the implementation of sweeping new regulation in capital markets is of course not a new thing. Now, Donald, you're much older than me, of course. So as you know, Donald, evolution in market regulation has been a continuous process for centuries. And as the markets evolve and as lessons are learned, you know, so too should the rules of the road of the markets evolve. So the key is that hopefully as those rules are developed and applied, they're done so in a way that makes the system safer while also maintaining depth and liquidity and encouraging things like financial deepening and efficient risk distribution. So definitely a critical moment of change in the industry driven by SACR, and it certainly won't be the last.
Just a thought on that, Justin. We're going back to 2008 and the great financial crash that brought much of the financial system to its knees. Why do you think it's taken so long for us to get to this stage with SACR more than 10 years later, and we're talking about it now? Is there a particular reason for that, do you think, or does it just take time to get the system right so it functions well?
Yeah, it's a good question, John. And I don't think it took 10 years to get to a position where SACR is now kind of the soul saving grace that's making the system safer. Over the last 10 years, there's been a whole boatload of implemented new regulation, both market structure and prudential, things like what Donald mentioned, mandatory clearing, things like mandatory initial margin and changes in the way people margin, both on an initial margin basis and a variation margin basis. So SACR is a critical and a big step in what has been a 10-year process, but it follows on the back of a series of prudential and market structure changes that have really helped the system become safer.
So where will the impact of SACR be most keenly felt? Justin, back to you on that.
Well, that's a big question. It's difficult to paint with a broad brush across the whole industry when in reality, it's really a function of the type of entity you are, what your business composition and your business mix is, how you transact in the markets. That said, I think the simplest answer to this is that certainly a huge impact will be felt within the prudentially regulated entities globally, and that means the big banks that will have to abide by SACR directly. And in many cases, right now, despite SACR not being fully implemented in a bunch of jurisdictions globally, of course, there have already been many, many years of preparation within these institutions to think about projecting and understanding the impacts across their businesses and asset classes, how that affects scarce and costly capital, as Donald mentioned, not to mention the work done at those institutions to develop the operational and capital management tools to monitor and address these things on a live basis. And now for many of these large banks, you're in this stage where the logic of what happens business as usual under SACR is still being learned, since business as usual is certainly about to change as a result of the SACR rollout. And this discovery process of the new business as usual and what's possible is something that Capitolis and AcadiaSoft have spent tons of time on with many market participants, and not to spill too many beans here, but it's really exciting to think about what will be possible in this new regime. But maybe focus on a separate part of the equation. There's this whole big world outside there, the buy side, that's not the prudentially regulated part of the system, that could also be affected by nature of how trading appetites and trading behavior at the big dealers may change. Take an example, take a corporate that produces something and exports it for sale in foreign markets. That corporate may hedge foreign currency revenue exposures relative to domestic currency cost bases and may do so by trading short-term FX derivatives, foreign exchange derivatives, and rolling them on a frequent basis. Of course, many times, maybe all of the time, this corporate might be hedging with a big bank market maker that's a prudentially regulated entity that will eventually be under SA-CCR. But in a pre-SA-CCR regime, despite the trading activity of this corporate being directional, the short-dated nature of it may, on a relative basis, have attracted, let's call it, less unit capital on the bank market maker side. But under SA-CCR, there's much more of a bucketing of aggregate exposures of foreign exchange trades of a specific currency pair, irrespective of the duration of those trades. So this short-dated directional activity that's driven by the buy side could be a bit more painful for the bank market makers to facilitate under SA-CCR, which, if you think about it, could mean this sort of trading activity could be affected for the buy side, not because they're directly under SA-CCR themselves, but because of the knock-on effects of SA-CCR on the big bank market makers that facilitate that sort of activity.
Justin makes a really good point there about the wider impacts. I mean, we tend to focus on the banks because this is ultimately a Basel banking regulation, but it has profound impacts across all of the derivative users, whether they're buy side institutions or private offices or you name it, pension funds, wherever derivatives are used. This fundamentally changes the structure of the operations of the derivative producers. And therefore affects the users and buyers in the same way that when the initial margin regulation came in, it changes the operating base, or when the variation margin rule came in, or when clearing was introduced before that. I mean, these all, Justin, you described them very well as market structure changes, ultimately impact on users, and users ultimately means the wider economy and all the way out onto the high street. And that's the thing that's easy to forget.
You raised there that point on initial margin, Donald, and it comes into play here clearly. Why is it, do you think, so important to commingle capital with initial margin to balance capital requirements?
Yeah, that's a really good question, John. The two counterparty credit risk capital and initial margin, at least in the uncleared derivative space, probably are the two largest and most important regulations that affect the business. And that they, on the one hand, in capital, as I mentioned, capital is very, very expensive, and the allocation of capital is one of the arts of the financial world. Why? Because it costs 10-15% per annum. Initial margin is different. It's there to manage the risk of large positions when they need to be closed out. So the volumes of initial margin are much, much higher, maybe 10, 15 times higher than the capital requirement. But luckily, it doesn't have to be funded at the same cost of 10 or 15% per annum. I mean, depending on the institution, it may cost anywhere between very little and 1, 2% per annum to fund that initial margin. But these two risk mitigants, and the capital is really there to protect the core of the assets of the bank, and the initial margin is again there to manage counterparty closeout risk. They really are the two big drivers, I would say, of the derivatives business these days, and that's why they're important. So managing the two of those in tandem is really, really important. And what's important, doubly important, not to do, is this kind of whack-a-mole thing where you independently manage down, say, the initial margin. So, you know, margin is related to risk. I'm going to drive down the risk in one portfolio, and you suddenly find that the capital consumption goes up because it's driven by something else. So this joint managing of margin and capital is really key. And that's what we've been working on with our partners and friends in Capitolis.
I think that's exactly right, Donald. And it's important also to consider not just between different institutions, but within an institution, what is more binding at specific points in time. Because as you mentioned, all of these things are dynamic, and that means it's very, very important to have the tools, processes, and solutions in place to measure, monitor, and manage this across all of those fronts, including capital and margin, but not just capital and margin, things like default fund contribution, things like CVA capital, and on and on. And that's not a trivial, it's not a trivial challenge. I think about it kind of like, every weekend here in New Jersey, I mow my lawn, I weed the beds, I water the grass, and on and on. If I don't do one of those things on a week, by the following week, it becomes such a disaster and a much more challenging thing to fix. And I need to fix it because I don't want to embarrass my neighbors. You don't want to embarrass your neighbors in New Jersey, I can tell you that much.
And I'm sure your garden's in very good condition, Justin, by the sounds of it.
It's in wonderful condition. My back is not in such great condition because of it, but it's worth the effort. But it's no—it's really no different in risk-based capital, size or leverage-based capital, margin, and even other things like I mentioned, like default fund contribution and CVA capital. If you continuously address these things on multiple fronts, that minimizes the potential for one of them to become a disproportionate problem. And then if it becomes a disproportionate problem, oftentimes it's much more challenging to address that problem post-fact. Donald, you may not fully relate to that. You probably have a staff to take care of your palatial estate, but I think anyone listening here.
That's because I remember the Great Tulip Crisis.
That's right.
But you probably remember the canals and the network frenzy around the railways.
I do.
Oh, it's clear there's plenty of age and wisdom here. That's for sure. But Justin, I wanted to come to you in your role as president of Capitolis. Now, you hinted a little earlier on about the work that you're doing with AcadiaSoft and how exciting that is. Talk to us about the company you lead and how it partners with AcadiaSoft.
Yeah, thanks for that, John. Capitolis, we have a really big vision, and it's centered around real-time and continuous optimization for all participants in the capital markets, large and small, sell side and buy side, and really everything in between. And this can only really happen if you have a means to deploy technology-driven, low-friction solutions to market participants in a scalable fashion. And that's really what we do to help our clients eliminate unnecessary drag on their balance sheets. To do that, the solutions delivered have to consume and normalize data. You have to apply the analytics necessary to solve the dynamic financial objectives Donald just mentioned. You have to deliver the optimizations. You have to facilitate execution, and on and on. It's really the entire workflow. And hopefully it's all done in a way that's exciting, that's flexible, and compelling so that you can drive real network and community growth. And if you think about the end state of that, Relative to today, we believe that very few market participants, typically the biggest ones, optimize with very few others, typically the other biggest ones, infrequently on a subset of products. But in the future, we believe that everyone should optimize everything with everybody else all the time. And if you get that right, that's very healthy for the entire system because it reduces risk, reduces friction, optimizes capital and returns. All of that's great for the safety and health of the system and the market at large. Now, in AcadiaSoft and Donald and Chris and their whole team, we found a firm and people with the same passion for creating and deploying technology-based solutions to increase the health of the system for all participants. And on top of that, really, AcadiaSoft has tremendous capabilities in data acquisition, normalization, standardization, calculation, all of the Asians, basically. And those capabilities have really allowed them to earn, and rightly so, the trust of clients across the capital markets over many, many years. So what we'll be doing, and we're excited about it, is combining the strengths of our two firms to deploy what will be the benchmark optimization platform to address all of the things we've discussed today. And the platform will have all of the necessary components required to consume and normalize large amounts of trade and risk data, create real-time optimization proposals designed to address most of the constraints we talked about today, to allow our clients to access a platform in the cloud to deliver those proposals and initiate them and facilitate execution of them. And so we've been working on this for some time now with Donald and team at AcadiaSoft. And I know I speak for all of us here at Capitolis when I say we couldn't be more excited to partner with them and with you, Donald, on what we create. And we think that will do amazing things for our clients in the markets. And I suspect, Donald, that we'll probably have a lot of fun doing it.
We've already had a lot of fun. And And yeah, a whole pile more to come. And look, we very much share that vision of you know, the benefit of a network of standardization of data and risk metrics, and the benefits that you can add to the industry as a result of doing that. We've kind of moved from a regime, actually, if you step back and look at it, where things like margin and capital and risk mitigation were all done idiosyncratically within each financial institution to its own standards, to a world now that we've already started to move into and will be fully moved into sometime next year, where all the risk measures, the primary risk measures, are all standards based. So whether it's, you know, the initial margin SIM, standard initial margin method, or SACR, the standard approach to counterparty credit risk, or indeed the standard approach to FRTB, which is the market risk equivalent, fundamental review of the trading book, we are moving into a standards-based world. And what that does is changes the focus from every institution working idiosyncratically on its own to there being a collective benefit to everybody working together. And the bigger that network is, the more benefit there is for everybody. And that's really where working together with Capitolis, we share a vision for how these services can be delivered to the market.
It sounds like you're conquering the Tower of Babel there, Donald. That standardization, that multiple understanding across different environments and areas, certainly coming into play here. But Donald, to what extent is technology powering all of this and allowing SACR to be introduced in the way that it is?
That's a really good question, John, because we all take for granted that we can do this, right? But this is all facilitated by the presence of large-scale cloud computing. So the ability to scale up hundreds and hundreds of processors for dealing with these complex calculations on portfolios of millions of trades across, you know, tens if not hundreds of counterparties. And this would only have been possible over the last 3-4 years, I would say. This sort of mass optimization across millions of positions with multiple target variables is a very, very new thing. And we completely take it for granted, and we really shouldn't.
Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time now, so I want to ask one more question of you both, and that is, what you think SACR will mean for the future of the margin and collateral industry? I think you've hinted at a few of these few thoughts in this direction already, but I'd love your thoughts on the future. Don, I'll come to you first.
Well, I think, you know, just kind of picking up on what I said there, what SACR and all these standardization initiatives do is level the playing field in a way, in that they create a common basis for institutions to measure regulatory risk and the capital that they have to hold against it. And what that opens up then is a whole world of possibility where institutions will probably focus on what differentiates them in the market, whether it's their strength in capital, their strength in funding, their strength in risk management, their broad and deep client relationships or special geographical focuses. What we want to do is and we think the future is in freeing up institutions to focus on what differentiates them, and really, you know, to use the analogy of a ship, to be sitting on the bridge steering the ship rather than down in the engine room calculating capital.
And Justin, I'll leave the final words to you there. We're on the ship at the moment. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's right. I don't have as profound an analogy there, but Donald, everything you said agreed. It's really, if you take a step back, a change in the industrial logic in any industry is an exciting time if you're at the heart of it, like you mentioned, Donald, navigating the ship. And this is exactly what SACR is. It's a change in the industrial logic of a large swath of the capital markets, and that's exciting. And with that type of change comes certainly risk, but also opportunity. And this is no different. And we think the opportunity here is exceptionally exciting to really focus on real-time continuous optimization under the new SACR logic and taking into account things like margin simultaneously. And that's possible now because of the standardization, Donald, that you mentioned, coupled with the right technology and the tools to deploy that technology to a broad part of the market. And I think this is the first cycle where a much broader swath of the market can participate in these critical exercises. And when they do, that really will reduce risk and increase economic returns while the system itself becomes safer while maintaining liquidity, kind of back full circle to where we started. We really believe in that. We believe it to our core. We can't wait to continue to do our part with our partners at AcadiaSoft to make it all happen. So very exciting times.
Well, it's a fascinating subject, but unfortunately we are out of time now. So Donald Gallagher, Justin Clue, thank you very much indeed. And thank you for listening to Ahead of the Curve. We'd like to know what you think, so please do get in touch and share your thoughts on SACA or any of the different subjects that we've been discussing as part of this podcast series. And you can find out more about AcadiaSoft by going to acadiasoft.com.